Welcome to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds, featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I am your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branching Minds team, here to lead conversations and to shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students. I am thrilled to announce our 2025 virtual MTSS Summit happening this December. This two-day event is all about MTSS innovation with intention, where we will dive into bold ideas and practical strategies to ensure every student is supported and every educator is equipped to succeed. Join an international community of educators and leaders to explore how intentionality and innovation can drive meaningful change in MTSS implementation. You won't want to miss this incredible opportunity to connect and grow. With national literacy scores staying the same or even dropping over the last few years, many states, districts, and schools are looking for better ways to help students learn to read. So today we're excited to have Nicole Cade, CEO of Greenfield Learning, an educational consulting firm, an educational advocate focused on literacy and many other things. But she's here to join us to chat about literacy challenges that educators are facing and what we can do about it. So welcome to the podcast, Nicole.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Nicole, first of all, tell us a little bit about yourself and why you do this work around literacy.
Yeah, you know, that story goes back a long way. I was a struggling reader myself, and I had a lot of different kindergarten and first grade teachers for various reasons. And I managed to get through until third grade when a student sitting next to me said, "She can't read, she can't read." And that they pointed out that I was just turning the pages when they turned the pages. And at that point, I went from being invisible and blending in to being ostracized, you know, taken out, put in special education classes. But even then, at that time, they didn't really know how to teach reading either. And until my family bought me Hooked on Phonics for Christmas and my neighbor taught me how to read, it was fourth grade before I knew how to read. And that experience had a profound impact on me. And so that's why I decided to become a teacher. I wanted to make sure that that didn't happen to anybody else. And so I started teaching third grade, and I remember getting my first years of state scores back, and everybody was so impressed by the scores. They were the highest that the school had seen in third grade in a long time, but it was 17% proficient. And when I went back to my classroom, that pride went away because I noticed that was just two kids in my class that knew how to read. And so then I started doing that investigation on my own. You know, how is it that kids learn to read? What do we know in the research? I've always been very interested in research. So I started reading all the things and asking to see other schools. And I figured it out, right? There was all of this research on structured literacy and explicitly teaching phonics. And that was very different than what I was doing, which is a very balanced literacy approach, reading workshop, exposure to books. And I realized I had had a lot of exposure to books. Everybody in my family is a bookworm. Everybody's nose already in a book. Everyone was always reading to me, but that's not what taught me to read. Explicit instruction did. And then I was, you know, doing that in my third grade classroom, but it was just my classroom and there weren't people ready to make the change with me. So I went to teach middle school. And unfortunately, I found the same thing. That there were students there that people were calling lazy, that people were calling stupid, that they were calling behavior problems. But in reality, they just didn't know how to read, not because they couldn't, but because nobody taught them. And so I did that. And then I did it at a site level coaching and at a district level as RTI. And I still wasn't making the progress that I wanted to make. I still wasn't influencing as many people to change their reading practices as I hoped that I could. And that's when I came into this role with Greenfield Learning, creating our professional development department, really thinking of finding the best people to teach teachers how to teach reading. And my kids always say that. My mom teaches teachers how to teach reading. And in that work, we've had such amazing results supporting teachers and helping them see that what they were doing in the past, they weren't doing intentionally, right? And now that we have better practices, we can make those shifts. But what is really anchoring me in the work today is that I have a fourth grade son who cannot read. And when we see the statistics around children who can't read and the school to prison pipeline and the suicide rates and just the homeless rates and all of the terrible things that we say happen to children if they cannot read by third grade. And then I realized, you know, it wasn't me. It's not going to be him, but I do this work because it can't be anybody else. So I'm really excited to share what I know and see if I can get some more folks excited about teaching reading.
Well, you've come to talk to the right person, because I was a middle school teacher that encountered a lot of those students that did not have the reading skills. And I came up in the, when you teach middle school or high school, very content focused, literature focused, not necessarily teaching reading focused. And I was always like, I don't know what to do, because I didn't have that background in the phonics training and the more explicit reading training. And so I'm excited to kind of dig into this a little bit more. You know, and as you mentioned, literacy is just such a foundational skill. And there are still so many students that are struggling. So from your perspective, what's some of the biggest challenges that teachers face right now in helping students become strong readers?
I mean, there are so many things. And depending on what state you're in, I happen to be in California, and what your policies are, it really has to do with, when we really look deeply, it's a lot of data with no direction. So we know that students aren't doing well, but we don't really know why. And if we know why, we're not really sure what to do about it. And if we know what to do about it, then we don't know how to fit it into our schedule, or we don't have the right resources. And so a lot of it has to do with allocation of resources, including time and effort. So many different priorities for so many different things that make it hard for teachers to really focus on the literacy component.
Yeah, I think you're right. There is that piece that there are a lot of competing initiatives right now. And so having the time and the energy to focus on specifically those reading skills. But we know, like, that's so foundational for many other things for students. It, like you talked about, influencing behavior, influencing motivation and engagement, and how, especially in those early years, it's very pivotal for their success down the road. And so, yeah, it really depends on the state. I think there are quite a few states that have state policies around early literacy and individual reading plans. And so you see a lot more states making that initiative, or even mandating some dyslexia screening. I know happens at the state level. So it really depends on those places. And so if you don't have those things, if you don't have that push, that could be the challenge that teachers face. And I think you named something as you were talking about your why, this is the way that we've always done it. I think that even challenging other teachers to think about it differently. And I would say even teachers that have been in education a long time, that they've done it a long way. It's harder to change those minds, or even change the patterns, if it's more ingrained in sort of the culture of the school or the department, or even, you know, some of those teachers. And so it really does take a little bit of willingness on either a leader sacrifice or just other teachers to say, I know this is the right thing to do. We need to change what we're doing. And I think from, you know, we have a lot of leaders that listen to this podcast. It's thinking about, where are the resources going? Is there a way that we can be creative about it to make sure that we provide our teachers the training that they need in order to make this change happen?
And that's one of the things I wanted to make sure was a part of this professional development division when I created it 10 years ago, is I sat through a lot of PD, and then administrators would say, oh, but we don't do it that way here. Or the district would say, we don't do it that way here. And I wanted to make sure that was really crystal clear about exactly what was expected. And some of that includes doing what we call a redundancy study and coming in and seeing, you have so many tools doing the same thing. How can we narrow this down, not just for budget, but so that we're narrowing our focus on how many different things a teacher needs to know how to do to be able to implement them well, which, you know, it's really easy to get distracted by shiny new things, but literacy is not a shiny new thing. So we need to think critically about, what do we really believe students can do? And the research shows that 95% of humans have the cognitive ability to learn to read. But we have been settling with, in my case, when I was new, 17%, in a lot of places, 30%. And we get excited when 50% of the students in our class are literate. And we know that it can be 95. So how do we learn to question what we've been doing and not say, do I have to change it? But do I have evidence to continue doing what I'm doing? And if not, what are the little shifts? We ask people to think about things they can maintain. Everybody is doing something right. And mostly, they're definitely doing it for the right reasons, right? I don't run into anyone in education that's out there saying, I'm going to make sure kids don't learn how to read today. They want kids to learn to read, but we might not be expecting enough of kids when it comes to their ability to learn to read.
I love that you talked about that, that they have the ability. I think sometimes it is challenging that narrative that students are unable to learn something. It may just mean that you have to make more effort or do it in a different way because their brains work in a different way. Like, I think that's also the challenge too, is that if you teach in the exact same way for all these students and 15% of them don't learn it, like, it's not saying that there's something wrong with those 15%. It means that there's something wrong that in the way that you taught it for those 15%. And so really kind of coming back to, how do we support students that, you know, because we talk a lot about MTSS here at Branching Minds, and we know that like tier one core instruction, really, you're going to hit 85% of students most likely if it's high quality, differentiated instruction. And so there may be some students that need that more support, more targeted support. And so you just have to have that in mind, that if you're not hitting 85%, or you're not, like, if your core instruction, if your tier two is bigger than your tier one, like, there's something wrong with that core instruction that needs to happen. And so I know that we talk a lot about examining those things first. And even you talked about, like, making sure that we're not, you know, doing, you know, duplicating efforts and making sure that our main focus is on track. You know, I know you mentioned this a little bit about like phonics. And so I would love to hear a little bit about what other important things like phonics and fluency, especially in the early grades, but what other gaps do you think we need to address and really set students up for success with reading? Are there other gaps that you think that are missing besides that phonics and fluency piece?
Absolutely. You know, I happen to mention phonics and Hooked on Phonics because that's where me as a dyslexic, my gap was in phonics. And so if you know much about the simple view of reading, there can be this word recognition gap, or there can be the language comprehension gap. And so we really, thinking about the population of our fabulous country, we have lots of different languages spoken here. And whether that oral language is built in English or any other language, it's building those critical thinking skills, building that vocabulary. And all of that also fits into language comprehension. And when we think about language comprehension, it's background knowledge, vocabulary, sentence level understanding, all of those things that are really important. And I found that as soon as they found out that I was dyslexic, they took all of my texts down to something that I didn't care about and that didn't make sense. And we have a lot better decodables now to be making sure that they make sense. But understanding the purpose of text, and when it doesn't matter if you can pull it off the page or if you're listening to it or if you're having someone read it to you, but we need to make sure that we're not starving students thinking while we're waiting for their decoding to catch up. And so that we're building that. And you can build language comprehension in any language. And those skills, those critical thinking skills, like inferencing and summarizing and all of those things, can be taught in any language. And then you're just switching vocabulary, right? You can really focus on that. But when we haven't given the opportunity to really build language comprehension, then we have a double deficit.
Yeah, I think that that's a very good point, because there's a lot of times, especially at the middle school level, if we had a student that came in that didn't speak English, and, you know, they're in an ESL class, but they're also in my English class. And so for me, I had to, you know, translate articles. We would make sure that they had something that they could read and do the same skills in another language, knowing that still supported them learning. It didn't have to be in English for them to gain the skill of understanding the main idea of an article. And so there's a lot of, you know, and now AI has a lot of like great tools that you can do for translation and those kind of things. But I think it's really important to like seeing how those things work together and not trying to isolate, oh, they just, in order for to them to get this, they had to get this first before this. And that's why I think we're like, especially reading is more of the spiral of skills. You're always learning and deepening reading skills. Whereas, you know, like math is a little more sequential in some ways. I think that, you know, English and learning to read is more like deepening those skills. more, you know, as you grow, you get more complex text and more complex sentences and things like that. And so it's important, though, to like make sure that, especially in a main, you know, a first language, is to support the reading skills there for the language comprehension.
Absolutely. And we talk about that first side of the symbol viewer reading, that word recognition. Those are all constrained skills, right? There's a finite number of them. We know exactly what they are. We know exactly what to test for them. And you can get to 100%. Everything else is a multidimensional skill. I'm never going to be able to say that you know all of your vocabulary, or you have all the background knowledge, or you can understand this very complex text, because it's all weaved and connected in different ways. And so, in addition to having these multidimensional skills, they also cross over together, right? Which is what is shown in Scarborough's reading rope. Like, they're all, if you pull out one thread of that rope, there's going to be a weakness that could fray, and that it isn't just a linear progression when we're learning to read. We're always developing these skills in tandem and growing together.
And I think that's why you were talking about how, like, you know, having all of the background knowledge, I think that that's a great illustration for why testing those kind of things is really, for me, I think about some of those common assessments that I gave students, or even just the benchmark assessments. I think background knowledge is one of those things where, like, you can try to supply your students, but they have such different backgrounds or different life experiences that you know, impacts their reading comprehension. So I just think about, like, a seventh and eighth grader, may not, every student in the classroom may have a different understanding of, like, background knowledge to know, you know, they may not be able to answer questions because they don't have that same background knowledge. And I think that's hard to measure. It's hard to assess that.
Yeah. And I think more important than measuring it is providing those discussions mm-hmm. that are building that language comprehension and oral language before. I know that I taught in San Jose, and there were always these stories about the snow. And these kids had never seen the snow. And so talking about it and showing pictures and having people who had been to the snow, and, you know, I brought my little snow cone maker and made, like, piles of ice. And, like, this is kind of what we're talking about in snow, and building those things. And a lot of curriculum have gone a long way to building thematic units of, we're learning all about space, and our stories, our narrative and informational about space, to build that content knowledge, because that's truly what gives you access to being able to do this work. At night, I listened to an app called Calm, and one of the options that they just added was listening to a report on the weather for shipping companies, or for sailors. That's what I want to say. It's a report for sailors. And you couldn't understand anything that they were saying. But if you were a sailor and you had that background knowledge, you would understand all of it. But for the rest of us, it was just lulling us to sleep, reading random numbers and coordinates. And, like, I don't even think they really said rain. It was just like a code for rain. It was their own special code. And it really made me think about language comprehension. And, like, it didn't mean anything to me, and it helped put me to sleep. But, you know, it's a really critical thing.
So in all of this, it's just making me think of so many different, like, situations in my classroom as an English teacher. You know, one of the hardest parts of teaching literacy is keeping those students motivated. Like you talked about, feeling like you kind of were just going through the motions, and especially when they're struggling. And so what are some ways that you advise teachers, or work with teachers or schools, to make reading instruction more engaging and fun for the students that might be struggling?
When I was a teacher, I was taught that, you know, phonics was boring, that repetition was boring, but that was not my experience as a student. And so as I worked with more and more struggling readers at the elementary and middle school level, I found it wasn't really what I was doing, but why I was doing it, and that I showed that I cared. So everybody wants to be seen, and they don't want to be, you know, they don't want everybody else to see them, but they want their educators and the adults in their life to see them. So when I sat down with these middle school students and said, hey, we talked about, you know, we did some of these assessments together, and here's what I found. Is it true? Do you really struggle in these areas, and can I help you? And yes, they want to learn to read. Everybody wants to learn to read because it gives them access. One of the saddest stories that I heard, which turned out to be a good story, I suppose, was that by teaching a child to learn to read, they now could order something other than chicken nuggets off a menu, because they could read what was on the menu versus just knowing, well, there's always chicken nuggets, to actually be able to read a menu and choose for yourself something you wanted to order. And that was really eye-opening to me, just even I had forgotten how limiting and small your world can be if you cannot read. So I guess all of that is the moral of the story to say, have a conversation with them. No, children will work hard for you as an educator. They're not going to work hard for a subject area unless it happens to be one of the things that they really love. And so it really comes down to, and I hate to say it because I feel like a broken record now, it really comes down to your relationship with the child, that everybody wants to be seen. And that if you say, I saw you struggling here, can I help you? And then you actually respond and help them and they start to see success, you won't be able to stop them from learning to read. And so it's that making sure that students feel success. And that is a really hard thing, especially in middle school when you might not be trained to teach reading or to notice those things. And even in later elementary school, but figuring out what the structures are in your school, what resources you have to be able to respond quickly to a student's struggle.
Well, and I think you're right in the resources. Like thinking there's so much of this that is maybe outside of the control of the teacher. Like we first were talking about some of the challenges of the resources. I even think that if your system, your organization, your district, your school doesn't have the systemic way of supporting students that are struggling with an MTSS framework or any kind of protocol for like when a student is struggling or we think they're having difficulties, we need to test them or we need to, what does your universal screener data tell you about students that are struggling? Like if you don't have those things in place, it's so much more about pressure on the teacher to notice and to make sure to identify and diagnose. And so it's so important to have those protocols. And I know that there's many districts and schools and states that are doing more of that now, but there are still places where students get to middle school and they do have dyslexia. Why didn't we find this out earlier? Or even that they just missed, because I think even just how you were turning the pages like other students were, there's a lot of students, they figure out how to do school. They figure out how just to do just enough to get by, you know, listening for the answers. They're very smart because they figure out how to sort of bypass the system. And so it's really important to have those things in place so that students don't get further down the line and are continuing to struggle. And then, because when there's a system in place, then there's more likely that collaborative effort that everyone wants to help students succeed. And it's not just about that one teacher identifying and supporting the student.
Yeah, MTSS is so key so that teachers have a roadmap and a support, right? If you think about that MTSS structure as the foundation of how do I do what I do and how do I make sure that that's equitable for all students, it's really important. And so at Greenfield, that is something that we help folks do is think about the assessments that they have and what does it mean if this score on this assessment and what do you do about it? What resources do you have? And what brought us into these conversations with Branching Minds is your platform makes it really visualizes that process, but still allowing choice and autonomy within the district's options, which I think is a really beautiful support to help that. But what we're finding is a lot of people aren't even ready for that. They don't know what their cut points are and what tools they recommend and for what prescription of intensity and for how long. And we're not really tracking what we're doing because there's so many other things to do. So tools like Branching Minds that make that easier can be really crucial as we move forward towards MTSS. Yeah.
I think sometimes the hard part too is that you encounter leaders that they don't necessarily have that background in literacy. And they're trusting their teams to be sort of the experts. And so you may have a team that have some training, but they don't have a ton of training around identifying certain struggles. And so I'm very curious about how those leaders that maybe don't have that background, what are some steps that they can do to support teachers in having better reading outcomes?
I think if they really understand the MTSS system, or they have someone that's helping them build that and leaning on the people who are having good reading results to kind of fill them in, that's a great first step, but there are a lot of academies out there for admin. Greenfield Learning has a literacy for leaders that we give you just enough to be able to have conversations with all of your educational partners, whether it be parents or board members, or you know, to be able to talk the talk a little bit and support your educators. And then we end with making look-fors. What should we be looking for in the classroom for the types of shifts that you're making? but LA County Office of Education also has a group of educators that get together and talk about literacy. And I think that that's key, is spending some time learning yourself, whatever avenue it's in, to make sure that you're up to date on that as well. And I'm so excited that California actually just passed a law that anyone getting an admin credential will have to have a course in literacy. And so making sure we all have that same set of information is going to help with that continuity and eventually the use of your MTSS plan and your reading results.
Well, like we talked about, MTSS helps feed so much of that work in literacy and in academics, I mean, not just literacy, but math and other areas too. But I think I had someone on the podcast recently and they were talking about, they were trying to do the literacy work. Like they wanted to improve literacy, but then they realized that MTSS is going to actually help us more setting up those structures to really meet the needs of students. And specifically with literacy, we talk about, you know, having, you know, doing the screeners at the right time to make sure that you're catching those students early that may have struggles that aren't just, you know, normal second grade struggles, but really that maybe they need a little bit more assistance or more targeted supports around phonics or fluency or some part of that, the reading rope, to make sure that all those pieces are in place before they move on. You know, and I think that we talk a lot about different technology tools, but I'm curious about how you find just even working with schools using other tech tools to support reading instruction or to support reading progress monitoring. Like, what do you think has been really effective in helping lighten the load of teachers? Because this feels like big, heavy, lots of work. Is there anything specifically that you've encountered that has been really helpful in that way for teachers?
Greenfield Learning started out as an ed tech company and selling ed tech tools. We partnered with Lexia for over 20 years. And tools that are intended to be blended learning are what I've seen really helps. And what I mean by that is it's not something that the student is getting on by themselves and you're not looking at the data. It's something that is, you know, kind of working as a teacher's assistant to gather that formative assessment data, to let you know where students are struggling and telling you immediately what to do about it. So anything that is taking student data that's fresh and current, serving that up to you, telling you what to do with it, and providing some action steps is really helpful. Whether that's a blended learning tool like Lexia, whether it is a platform like Branching Minds, there has to be some kind of cause and effect based on student data.
Yeah, that's really helpful. I do think that sometimes, I think we were talking before we started recording, there's so many different tools out there that are flashy and great and shiny as like, this is the next thing that's going to solve your problem. So it's so easy to get distracted by those things. And I think I like that you identified those blended learning tools, because we know that technology alone cannot be an answer to fixing a problem like early literacy struggles, but it can be a tool. And really, but it's about like building a system that supports the work of educators along with tools.
Absolutely. I could not say it better myself. It is about a system. You know, one teacher told me, if a good teacher can teach with a stick in dirt, and I believe that's true, but if you have really good systems, you can make any tool a good tool. Okay, maybe not any tool. Any research-based tool can be a good tool, but it's about how you use it, using things with intention and intentionality within your system that is really key.
Yeah. That's very true. Okay. So one last question I want to ask, because you've taught at the middle school level. So I think I love this conversation. For those middle school and high schools, even high school students that are struggling with reading, what are some things that teachers can do that actually help them close the gap, or even just like tools that you found that are really helpful? I mean, there's so many times that we talked about secondary literacy. I would just love to hear a little bit of insight on that.
You know, one of my favorite tools for working on the word recognition side of the rope is Anita Archer's Rewards. It's a teacher-led small group program. It is based in, you know, nonfiction and really helps students build those decoding skills. The most challenging thing with middle schoolers is honoring their maturity while still teaching them those decoding skills. So there are some good tools out there around that. But what it really comes down to is you have to know the patterns. You have to know what the expectations are. And so you need somebody who knows them to teach them. Our team also wrote a book on those expectations that I can share with you. You have to know what they are, and they have to know what they are. And as soon as they crack that code on the word recognition side, they're good to go. On the language comprehension side, it's making sure that we are not stifling that piece. because they can't access the text yet. So all of the things that you talked about in, you know, allowing, making sure that those discussions are happening. And for our students that need to build that language comprehension, thinking about, you know, how you're pairing them, how you're building their background knowledge, really having very intentional vocabulary routines that can be connected to any subject area, right? It's really what's hard at the middle school level is that decoding piece, because it's so different than what a lot of your class might need or what you might have been taught to do. So thinking about how to address that.
Yeah. Honestly, that was one of the biggest things I found is that my students that were struggling, you know, if they were put into a reading class or on a reading program, so much of it was way below their maturity level. And so it disengaged them right away. They're just like, this is what babies do. Or they would just be like, that's for little kids. And so I think that honoring that is really important and making sure that high interest topics, engaging them in, I think for me is engaging them in their interests. And making sure that you're helping them access the material. And then alongside those decoding pieces is really important with the vocabulary. And I had some training on teaching reading at the secondary level and really talking about the need for some of even the oral language too, just like making sure that they know how to actually pronounce words that they encounter and doing some of the vocabulary work a little bit rotely, but everyone together, like just learning how to do that is really important for them. And yeah, high interest as much as possible, because it's so hard to keep them motivated.
Yeah. And as I mentioned earlier, it is that relationship. Like when I sat down with kids who were struggling to read, especially, you know, in the upper elementary or middle school level, I would tell them reading is hard, right? And it's hard because you haven't been taught in a way that works for you yet. And that's what we're going to do. And it's going to be hard and we're going to get through it together. Like they need to know that it's not a natural thing that everybody else just picked up and they didn't get it, right? That's not what happened. It's not a them problem. It's a system problem. And we're here to try to correct that. And, you know, our middle schoolers have a lot of life experience these days. And so just understanding and being real with them about why we're doing it and just calling it out, like, this looks a little baby, but we need to learn these things first until, you know, so yeah, we're going to be talking about cat. It might have a cartoon cat, but as soon as we learn, you know, how C and A act together, then you can apply that to catastrophe and looking at those things. But being real with them, it really matters.
Yeah. Well, and I even think the part of that is addressing that, the social emotional part of it too, recognizing how it may have impacted their experience in school. Because there's a lot of students that were struggling and they'd come to my class and go, well, I hate reading. And I'm like, you do because you had an experience that someone told you that you're a bad reader, or you've learned this somewhere that you're bad at this. And so that's why you don't like this. And so really having to address some of those emotional parts of learning, because learning can be really emotional. Talk to any teacher. We're always so excited when the light bulb goes on, and it can be a really emotional experience.
And I love that you mentioned, you know, teacher joy when the light bulb goes on, because that's what all teachers want. And when we think about, you know, folks like me, and maybe even like you mentioned yourself, like I didn't know what I was doing, but I was doing what everyone told me to do, but it wasn't working. So working through that emotional piece with teachers too, saying like, this is hard. This is not what you were taught. It was not in your credential program. It's not the materials your district provided you. And having the district, the principal, whoever, someone take responsibility for, you didn't know this. Now I'm going to make sure you do know this, and I'm here to support you. I'm sorry that you didn't have the right tools to help kids, and allowing some of that to come off of us. Like, we're already going to be the hardest on ourselves to know that we serve students for however many years, not knowing that there was a better way, and, you know, living with that. And we have to work through the emotional piece, not just for the kids, but also for us as we make these shifts.
Yeah. Well, Nicole, we could probably spend another hour talking about literacy, because I feel like I would love to hear more about some of the work and even your story. But I just appreciate you coming and chatting about it for our listeners. You know, we have a lot of leaders that listen to this podcast, so it can be motivational for them to keep doing the work that they're doing, but also just to kind of equip people with the why. And even your story as a young reader is really important for us to remember. So thank you so much for sharing that with us.
I thank you for the chance to share it. And if anybody thinks that my story would be helpful to the middle school students that you were teaching, please just reach out. I'm always happy to share that it's not too late to read, and that you can do this hard thing.
Yeah. Well, and we'll make sure to share some of the things that you talked about resources wise in our show notes. So if anyone wants to click on the show notes to find out more about Nicole and her work. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds. Go ahead and subscribe to our feed wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget, if you are enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcasts on iTunes? This helps others find our podcasts and lets us know how much you love what we're creating. Branching Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchingminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn at Branching Minds.